I really enjoyed your new book, Recover to Live. It, truly insightful, and I see a lot of things that apply to family caregivers. What would you like family caregivers to learn from reading the book?
I mean, I did the book to really, you know, to put in black and white that addiction, whether it's a chemical addiction or behavioral addiction, is a illness. And I think that's the most important thing. My job as an advocate is to confront stigma and discrimination against those people who happen to have this issue either because of their genetics or because of their sociology. So it's important. This book, Recover to Live, is important because it gives you in very concrete scientific terms from some of the best minds, scientific minds in the world, what disease of addiction really is and what it isn't.
What I thought was interesting about the book is it's very accessible.
For me, look, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. I was lucky because of my, you know, because of the work that I've done, because of my experience, and because of my standing in the community, I was able to access some of the people that really do know what they're talking about. But my job in putting this book together was basically to make it accessible for normal folks, because people who are confronted with this issue, and it's a very large percentage of our population who comes across this illness, whether it's in their own families or in their workplace or with their friends, they don't know what to do. They really don't know what to do, and they really don't. They oftentimes can't trust the information that they get because they just don't know. And there are a lot of people in the world who prey on those who are confronting this issue and are able to take advantage of them because they're at such a vulnerable in such a vulnerable state. So this book is enormously useful because it's understandable and it's available for people for not a lot of money. So if you're dealing with this in your universe, you can look at this book, you can find out exactly what, you know, gambling addiction looks like or sex addiction looks like or drug and alcohol addiction looks like. And then you can also, you know, there's a program to begin recovery. If, you know, a lot of people do this on their own. I think initially people should get professional guidance. But quite frankly, in 1986, when I got clean and sober, I did it on my own. I went to a 12-step program. The first or the second tool in the seven essential tools to recovery that I outline in this book is 12-step fellowship. They're available all over the world. People can go there and they can get fellowship and they can get support and they can get a program to deal with this. Whatever kind of addiction that is manifesting in their life. So that's a big deal. Instead of spending thousands or hundreds or of dollars to somebody to get, you know, possibly good information, this book is, you know, $20 and you can get really good information.
Yeah, I like that. I really like the seven self-care tools. And the one that just stood out for me because I so believe in the concept is mindfulness.
If I had understood that craving, let's just take craving as a, you know, as one of the symptoms of addictive disease, that is overwhelming for people. That is the issue when you come out of a detox or when you come out of a locked room after 3 or 4 days, or you come out of and you're confronted with the craving for your drug or behavior of choice. Mindfulness allows you to put a little bit of distance through practice between your the craving, which is going to happen, and acting on it. And what I didn't understand when I was battling this issue, because mindfulness wasn't wasn't an act, wasn't anything that anybody really talked about, or wasn't a cohesive discipline, was that if you do this, if you practice this, you can, in 5 minutes or 10 minutes, that craving will pass. This is the thing about craving is it seems in the moment totally insurmountable.
Right.
But with the practice of mindfulness, you can, in fact, overcome it. Now, it's not going to happen right away. But addicts have to understand, the biggest thing that we have to understand is if you delay your gratification, you can achieve your goal of not getting into the craving. That's a big deal. Just understanding that it's possible is a big deal.
It seems to me that all of your books, Symptoms of Withdrawal, Moments of Clarity, Recover to Live, deal in part with the value of being in the moment, sharing open and honest communications with yourself and those you trust. Why do you feel that's so important for people living with addictions?
That's a complicated, great question. And I think, fundamentally, I think addicts are many of us are medicating aspects of our personality, aspects of our upbringing that we just find intolerable. Many of us are running away from ourselves. Many of us are afraid to really accept ourselves. To me, quite frankly, the key to life, or the key to a happy life, is living moment to moment, is appreciating each moment. Addicts are notorious for living in their heads, living in the past, living in the future, never being in the moment. There's a saying in 12-step recovery, if you've got one foot in yesterday and one foot in tomorrow, you're pissing all over today. I don't know whether you can use that on the internet, but that's true. And the biggest crime of that is missing your life, quite frankly.
Right.
And just because you have an understanding of that, and just because you get into recovery, doesn't necessarily mean that is going to go away. Quite frankly, the one of the great gifts of recovery is not only beginning to know yourself, which is the greatest gift that I've ever gotten in recovery, and anybody who I respect or know who's really maximized their recovery has been given the gift of self-knowledge. And really, because that's the thing that most of us are running away from in one form or another. Coming to recovery, you think you have all of these ideas about what you want your life and yourself to look like, and that all changes, hopefully. The people who, in my estimation, don't stay sober or don't have the kind of life that they can have are people who invent constructs similar to what they did with drugs and alcohol that prevent them from finding out really who they are.
We urge family caregivers to attend support groups, to consider these support groups their trusted family of choice. And it really seems
right
to dovetail the message of 12 steps groups that, you go and you're in a trusted environment of people who get what you're going through because they're going through
right
it too.
Right. Well, I think that's a powerful thing. I think it's very difficult. I think it's very difficult to recover from these things, from any illness, whether it's mental illness or physical illness, by yourself.
Right.
On some level, I think, to be honest with you, I think addicts are lucky. Because the ones that are able to turn this into the best possible thing, all of us get challenges in life. And this challenge, for me, forced me into community, forced me into dealing with my circumstances, my ego, all of the things that separate me from my fellows, separate me from my life, separate me from my health, right? Forced me to look at those things and to confront those things. Now, I do it very imperfectly, but I would never have done it in a million years if I wasn't forced to do it. So, there are people in 12-step programs will talk about being grateful that they're an alcoholic.
Right.
Being grateful that they're an addict. Now, anybody else looking at that would go, how could you possibly think that way? How you think that way is because of what it leads you to. And, you know, what you guys do and what, you know, it leads you to relying on other people. We as individuals don't want, we want to, you know, our ego says we can do it. We don't need you. We don't, you know, that takes you away from the best parts of life. And it's still, listen, being in recovery doesn't mean you automatically get that. I have to struggle every day to remember that I need, you know, I need other people to do this, to do my recovery or to do life, quite frankly.
Well, you know, with family caregivers, it's challenging because so much of recovery has to do with family of origin work, of going
right.
back.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're still with the
right.
people. You're caring for the people that you now have to go back and, you know, reanalyze your childhood with.
Right. So what a gift. In 12-step programs, they talk about, you know, the addiction just being the superficial aspect of this. That this is really, drugs and alcohol are not the problem. They're the solution for most people to underlying causes and conditions, which are the family of origin issues that drive people crazy and to depression and despondency. I mean, there's chemical aspects of this too, but a lot of the things that drive us to misery are those issues.
You spoke about it so clearly in the symptoms of withdrawal and so honestly, and you know, I felt like I was part of your support group when you were explaining your life.
Right. Well, I would encourage, I mean, this is the thing, like, unfortunately, a lot of people, that one of the things that we learn in my field is people will spend a lot of money in order to deal with their primary addiction in terms of treatment and that kind of thing, but they won't spend any money to deal with the issues afterwards. The family of origin issues, the codependency issues. And these are the things, quite frankly, that keep people sick, even when they put the drugs and alcohol down. You know, it says, Bill Wilson said, you know, the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, he said, you know, basically you can remain just as despicable sober as you ever were drinking. You're just not as obvious about it. You know, and there are plenty of miserable people walking around on the planet who have put their drugs and alcohol down that basically should go have a drink. Because if you don't deal with issues, seriously, if you don't deal with these issues afterwards, you know, it's problematic for you and for everybody else in your life.
Codependency, addiction, and family caregiving is a family issue. This doesn't happen in a vacuum, you know.
No, absolutely.
With addictions, family caregivers face a double challenge. Not only so many times their loved ones are misusing medications, but family caregivers do too. And, you know, it's the wide array of class one drugs that are sitting around the house when your loved one is dealing with a terminal or chronic illness. What do you say to someone who, if you feel like, okay, I know they or the person they're caring for are misusing drugs or alcohol, where do you start?
A lot of people come into these situations, and I'm sure you see it at family caregivers, where they don't have any relationship at all to chemicals. Addiction often happens in the vacuum of ignorance.
Great, yeah.
And if you give people good information, if you say, look, this substance is one of the most addictive substances on the planet, and, you know, once you try it, your chances of becoming, dependent on it are, you know, enormously great. And getting off of it is hellacious. And you may really want to think about that versus a couple of Aleve. And the truth is, you know, if you talk to any doctors for things that people will take an addictive painkiller for, they don't need it. You know, there are things that you definitely need, Schedule I narcotics for, but most things you don't. And if somebody's in a house caring for somebody, they need good information. We didn't, look, nobody ever thought about, you know, locking up their medicines, 10 years ago.
Right.
There was not even consciousness around that. Now we have it. ONDCP, our National Drug Control Policy, has information on this. There's good information out there that people should know about medication and about what they should do with their medications if there are other people in their environment.
For 66.7 million family caregivers in the country, if they don't share, if they don't interact, they don't go to support
groups, right,
they think no one's going through this as well.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And that's the environment that addiction loves. You're isolated. You're a victim. You're in pain. And there's something that will alleviate that. That's where everything lines up. And so if you can circumvent that by the work that you guys do in terms of bringing people together in support groups or educational opportunities for them to learn about things, that's going to make a huge difference. It took me 10 years to get clean and sober. During that period of time, I never lost my desire to be drug and alcohol free. I never lost my desire. Now, it didn't happen, but that 10 years is what got me the last 27 years that changed my life, that, you know, made it so possible so I have three kids who have never seen me drunk and stoned. And if I had said, well, you know, the fact that I can't do this, if I'd given up, I would have given up on my life. So never give up, even if your resolve doesn't hold up. Okay, that's number one. The second thing is, I mean, which is more of a holistic thing, is to really think about, those addiction, those people who have issues. I mean, there are probably plenty of people in the family caregiver world who are dealing with folks who are struggling with some of these issues. And to understand this, as my cousin Patrick likes to say, this is not about character, it's about chemistry. The people that are struggling with these issues are not bad people. They have an illness. They're sick people. You know, you'll be dealing with folks who are dealing with some of these issues, addiction issues, who behave badly. And it's hard not to be judgmental. Compassion and understanding are really what's necessary here. There's a volitional aspect to this thing, which is they pick up the drug, they pick up the glass of, scotch, they engage in the behavior, so we automatically assume if they just didn't do that, that it would end. But that's not the issue. And these people are fundamentally different than you are if you don't have this illness. People that are walking around with the disease of addiction are fundamentally different in their brain chemistry to those that don't have it. So whatever standard you're applying to them is irrelevant. Thank you so much for what you do, and thanks for your time.